This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
This is Joe Meyer, guest host of Wednesday Talk Radio. Lisa Loving is off. My in-studio guest is Dennis Thrault. Welcome, Dennis.
Hey, good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me. This is called The Morning After Show. We're going to do a little analysis on the election last night. This is a call-in show. The lines are open right now, 503-231-8187. We're going to be asking, did Portland make an informed science-based choice on fluoride? What was the role of money? Did race and economic status play a role? Did you change your mind about fluoride? Did you go from pro to no or no to pro? What made you change your mind? Was it really a civil war of the left? What do you think, Dennis? Would you call it a civil war?
Yeah, to some degree, I would call it a civil war of the left. I think certainly. I mean, look at the who's running the pro campaign and look at who is working on the anti campaign. They most of the time agree on a lot of things. This was not one.
Yeah, they sure do. I did a lot of pretty rough interviews too. One thing I found is when the right tries to pull something over on you, they're at least polite.
Yeah, the left is a little snarkier.
It can be a little snarkier.
Humor is the province of the liberals, I would say.
Yeah. What about the role of money, Dennis?
Money didn't – it mattered in as much as I think as it just emboldened the folks who were opposed to fluoridation. Looking at the giant sums that the Healthy Kids, Healthy Portland raised, and clearly it came down to volunteerism and passion, not money. I mean, money was – it's great, but that all went into winning Mark's pockets, you know.
It sure seemed to. It sure seemed to. What about other races? Any surprises?
Yeah, so we're looking at Josephine and Curry counties that rejected police and jail services. Eugene actually wanted to have more jail services. But really, weirdly, fluoride, I think, losing only by 4 votes in Washington County, and Metro, the levy, passing in Multnomah County overwhelmingly, but then failing in Clackamas and Washington counties, which does not bode well for the tri-county cooperative spirit we need.
Right. And the children's levy passed easily. I guess no surprise there. Or
well, in Clackamas, it only passed by like 50-some percent.
Right.
You know.
Right. And is that a reasonable way to fund things? If we have a real need for children, don't we just want to have a regular tax or general fund? Or why do we have these special levies?
It would be nice. And I guess because the way the programs are structured, it's so specific and they can measure things. And it's a nice story that it's probably easier to pass this way. But there are some questions. It's a city program. It's a city levy. Normally, the county covers social services. And, you know, when you get out of the county, you get out of city limits, there are probably kids who should be eligible for this. It should be either a joint effort or a county effort.
It seems like it. It seems like it. It sure does. And a school board, any surprises there?
I guess this is my school board member, Steve Buell, won, ousting Martin Gonzalez, who did not raise as much money. So that's a case where money probably actually did matter. I saw a lot of Buell signs up and down North Portland, and I think Gonzalez didn't have the teachers union support, which is probably important in a school board race.
Right. The numbers I have is about 30,000 for Buell and only about 3,000 for Gonzalez. So
that's big.
That's pretty big for a school board race, no doubt. No doubt. What about you, Dennis? Did you change your mind about fluoride, or what do you think about fluoride in general?
So I'll confess, we endorsed in favor of fluoridation, and I voted yes. I grew up in a place where water was fluoridated, and I was open-minded, but we did a lot of research, and it didn't change my mind. I felt better about my decision, and I don't think that the people who voted against it were coming at it from a position of sort of, you know, we're insane, we're not right, you know, the communists. I don't think that was the case. I think a lot of people had a reasonable and honest difference about sort of what was right for our community.
Great. Well, we've got a couple callers on the line, so let's hear from them. Spring, what's on your mind?
Well, Janice,
what's on your mind?
News editor of the Mercury.
Yes.
Did you not 2 weeks ago endorse fluoridation?
I just said
tell
that
the truth.
I did. I said that I did, and then I voted for it.
Dennis isn't hiding anything here. He's, no. He's pro fluoride.
Have you changed your mind?
No,
have
I'm not.
Have you read science?
How about you, ma'am? Were you always no on fluoride, or what made you?
I grew up in Portland. I'm in my 60s now, and you know what? My family's brainy.
Great.
We've always been against fluoride, and mainly, number one reason, why should everyone be forced to drink it? Individual rights? Also, what are we going to do with all the animals that have to drink it, watering our plants with it?
Right.
And you do know it's not the same as the fluoride in toothpaste.
Right.
This is not medical grade. It's industrial waste.
Right.
Okay? So, I mean, it doesn't take 10 minutes to find out the truth.
Well, you must be very happy then. Because
somewhere where they have it, where pregnant women can't drink the water.
Right. Well, you must be happy
because
it went down in big flames. Thanks for the call. We have someone else on the line. Joe, what's on your mind?
Can you hear me now?
We hear you good.
Okay. This is a prescription medication. It has no business being, there's no way to control the dose. Because, and especially for the people that have poor health, like kidney dialysis patients, it's going to be a death sentence for them. A lot of people that have immune disease, death sentence for them. But the bottom line is, you, Dennis Sirault, and your newspaper, and Willamette Week, and the Oregonian, and all the rest of these people that all should be boycotted.
Tribune and Scanner also, if we're...
What?
The Tribune and the Scanner also.
Right, yeah, and I couldn't believe the Scanner and Street Roots came out, and somebody
Street
must
Roots,
have paid
right.
them off. But the point is that there's no way to measure a dose in this, because some people drink more water than others. If you're watering your vegetable garden with it, you're taking in more fluoride. The water that hits your skin when you're taking a shower, if there's fluoride in that, that's
sure.
absorbing in through your skin.
Sure.
And you're inhaling this garbage, and it is garbage. And even the even the sodium monofluorophosphate or whatever the hell it's called that's in most fluoridated toothpaste, that stuff, it says to not to put any more than a pea-sized dab of it on your toothpaste, on your toothbrush, for your children, and to make sure that they don't swallow it, and if they do, you have to call the Poison Control Center. So even the so-called, you know, pharmaceutical grade of fluoride that's in the toothpaste, that's even dangerous.
Well, Joe,
okay?
And
these people and the newspaper, I thought at least the Mercury, I know the Willamette Week is somewhat corrupt.
Joe, let's let Dennis chime in there.
Well, I would say, first of all, this notion that we were corrupt. We actually listed, you know, the advertising we made from both sides, and we're perfectly willing to continue to accept advertising from both sides. It was a matter of a few hundred dollars, and it's on our blog. Go ahead and read that.
You know as well as I do that if you keep up this controversy, that's more income for you. And so do all the rest of these filthy shysters that run the yellow journalism newspapers in this in this city, in this state. I'll put it this way. Anybody who truly believes fluoride is good for your teeth also probably believes professional wrestling is real. And
I do
you
believe
that.
That
question on Jeopardy about the solar panels being removed off the roof. God, everybody else knew that. Why in the hell couldn't you figure that out? So you can't be the smartest bulb in the closet. So I think you're just a corporate lackey, and okay. I don't buy anything you guys say. You're corrupt.
All right.
Thanks for remembering that I won
Thanks,
on Jeopardy, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank
we got
you.
We got someone else on the line here. Thanks, Joe. Tim, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I just, it's pretty amazing how every single newspaper endorsed fluoride and every single politician pushed for fluoride, and they seem to be so completely out of touch with the majority opinion of the people of Portland. And I guess I just have a question for your guest. You know, who owns the Mercury, and what is their politics? Maybe you can just talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Happily. We're owned by a company called Index Publishing. They operate two newspapers, The Stranger in Seattle, which has won a Pulitzer Prize very recently, and The Mercury. Our founder and president is a guy named Tim Keck. He helped start The Onion. He's from the Midwest. These are not... We're not Pamplin. We're not Advance. Very different. We, you know, haven't always been on the right side of every issue over the years as a company. I think, you know, Dan Savage was the editor of The Stranger. He is a wonderful advocate for human rights, gay issues, and of course he was he editorialized in favor of the Iraq War. So we get it wrong. He apologized for that. I think fluoride is a little different than that. I don't think it's the Iraq War. And let
was
me tell you.
Was he in favor of fluoride?
Pardon?
Was Dan Savage in favor of fluoride?
I don't think he had a position on fluoride because he's not here. But I think he might be. I think he might be supportive of it. I think Seattle has fluoridated water and supports such things. You know, I, like I said earlier, I grew up with fluoridated water. You know, I spent all my.
One more question. I mean, what do you think accounts for the fact that every single media outlet came out in favor of fluoride, even though it was running against the overwhelming majority of the Portland population?
Well, I would say that the research we did made us feel very comfortable and that it was the right thing. And some of that's from personal experience growing up with it. And you know, we don't always decide what the majority of voters do. That's not our role. Our role is to say things that we think are true, whether they're popular or not. And certainly, you know, when I was editorializing and writing in favor of Occupy Portland, I know that was probably something the majority of Portland did not approve, and yet a lot of people thought that was swell and good because it was the way I approached the truth. So that my approach hasn't changed.
What about you, Tim? Where'd you get your information on fluoride, or how long have you been thinking about it?
Well, I've been thinking about fluoride for a long time. I've read several books. I researched it online. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of information out there, and it's, you know, you definitely wouldn't get it from reading the newspapers in the Portland area.
Do you feel like the science is solid? I mean, if you do research online, you can find whatever you want, basically.
There's tremendous amount of science out there. And, you know, the basic concepts of do no harm and also the populations that are put at risk by adding fluoridated chemicals to the water should have it invalidated the approach right away. I mean, you know, Mike Lindbergh and others who have renal failure or, you know, organ failure of various sorts, you know, it's dangerous for them. I mean, how in the world could we be talking about adding something that was going to be dangerous for our citizens to even come in contact with?
Well, how do you account for then two-thirds of America being fluoridated?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, we're living in a land that appears to be living in illusions, and, you know, how do you account for the fact that Europe is all voting out fluoride, and most of the world doesn't have fluoride, and the places that used to have fluoride have stopped having fluoride? I mean, the fact that so many people in America still do it doesn't speak well for the intelligence of Americans right now. I mean, hopefully Portland will show the way.
Well, in your research, have you turned up statistics for people who have actually, because of organ failure in other cities that have fluoridated water for decades, died or been ill? I mean, are there studies that actually come up with numbers that would sort of point to or illustrate these catastrophic health problems?
Well, I mean, I don't have it on the tip of my finger. I mean, I guess I'd point to the voters pamphlet and the piece by Mike Lindbergh, in which his doctor told him not to touch fluoridated water.
That's a good story, but that's not
our
data.
Well, it's not a statistic, but it's a doctor advising his patient. So, you know, how many others are like that? I mean, thousands. So.
Right. All right, Tim. All right. Let's give someone else a call. Thanks so much for calling in. What about you, listener? Did you change your mind about it? What do you think the role of money was? What do you think the role of race? Carl, what's on your mind?
Oh, okay. So I was saying the next step should be they should start putting contraceptives in the drinking water. That'd control the population problem.
Anything else we want to put in there?
What's that?
Anything else we want to put in there while we're at it?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Flavor powder.
But contraceptives, that would be kind of interesting.
I guess that's tongue-in-cheek.
What's that?
I guess that was tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
Anything else to add to that, then?
No.
Thanks for calling in. Let's see who else wants to say something. Greg, what's on your mind?
Hello?
Greg, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi. Welcome.
Well, I think since everybody's calling about the fluoridation issue, that's me, too. And
it was a hot topic for sure.
Well, it's interesting how nobody seems to be able to figure it out, and this is the key. You know, we have a lot of researchers done, funded by the dentists, And since that's the research the dentist apparently looked up, that's what he believes. And people that live here, let's take my case for example, grew up with fluoridated water, was extremely happy when I found out that when I moved here that they didn't have it, just in the basic sense of I don't want to run chemicals through my body. So, for instance, I avoid all this antibacterial soap like the plague because it's got to be bad for you, whatever chemical they're using there. I don't use household chemicals. I don't use household soaps. So the idea of putting a toxic chemical and groups of them in the water is just, it's really bizarre. I mean, the city council, I think for years, has been fighting the feds to try to keep them from dosing the water for a bacteria that doesn't exist. This is the reservoir thing and et cetera. But yet with this issue, they seem to be completely blinded to common sense. And
do you agree that fluoride will have some benefit for teeth?
No, absolutely not. Running a chemical through your body is bad for you any way you look at it. If you want to do a topical thing, do a topical thing. If they were serious about helping young people, then they would, especially young poor people, then they would go out and do the same thing Vancouver just did. It's pretty obvious. But I think that what you have is a case of here, and it's very interesting to hear you defend things, Dennis. And my point of entry to the world of this sort of thinking is the drug war. And I consider subjects like the drug war, or say Israel-Palestine, to be what I call highly indoctrinated subjects. Subjects that are so highly indoctrinated that nobody can form a critical thought in their head surrounding the subject. In many cases, it's exactly the same scenario as this, where you have a huge basis body of research that's done by people who are obviously directing that research towards a certain result, i.e. poisoning everybody with fluoride in the water.
What's their motivation there? Why would they be motivated to do that?
Why would they be motivated to do that? They're getting tremendous money from the chemical or whoever is producing this junk to put it out and force people to put it in their water. It's a bizarre kind of scenario where, you know, people are willing to poison themselves. For instance, apparently you're willing to poison yourself and everybody else on this table that's going to help poor people with their cavities, as opposed to what you know was really the problem, getting them good food that's not full of sugar and getting them dental care. I don't believe the dentist. I went years ago after I saw or heard a show on cable about mercury, and I went and found a dentist that was mercury-free, and I got all that stuff out of my mouth. They still claim that mercury doesn't off-gas. It should be a crime to put the mercury in children's mouths. So this is where the information that you're talking about comes from. The ADA basically has been pushing this for decades, you know. You shouldn't believe it. So did you believe the research now, today, do you believe the research that was put out on, say, homosexuals back in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s when we were doing electroshock and diabetic coma therapy to cure them?
Well, I went around in the 30s, but I know there is a lot of research out there, and there is a lot of noise in that research, and, uh-huh. and not all the research.
Yeah, have you ever heard of a book called the Fluoride Deception?
I've not heard of that book.
Okay. Probably should read that. I haven't read it either. It's not available at Paul's, although I bet it is now.
Well, I think Dennis's point is there's a lot of information on both sides, so there's it's hard to...
The information on one side is funded by the same sort of corporate people that usually us lefties look at with skepticism.
I think there is credible research that is not corporate funded.
It's not credible. Look at the research that surrounds the natural fluoride in water. We had some of it on cable on the air. We had some good shows that were informative. When people that live here that don't want to have chemicals, want to eat organic food, like I do, look at that sort of research, you go, oh yeah, just more of that research to force us to do chemicals. Like, for instance, the doctors dosing everybody with antidepressants. That stuff is toxic.
I'm not
don't
on antidepressants.
Well, I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying it's exactly the same thing. That they put out a lot of research surrounding it. Now everybody's convinced that somehow if you act differently, say you're shy, that all you need to do is get an antidepressant. That'll help you out. Well, actually, that's completely and utterly false.
Yeah.
People, you know, it's the same, but you don't buy that, apparently, but you buy this indoctrination surrounding fluoride. I think you need to look at where the sources are, try to examine why you're willing to believe those sources on this particular issue, when on other issues you're very, very skeptical. This is the key. This is why people like you are not lying. You're looking at the research, and you're going, oh, gosh, it looks overwhelming or whatever. But you're not looking at the source of that research, who funded it, what's the purpose behind it. you understand that this stuff just showed up in the, what, late 50s, early 60s?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, now it's everywhere. Well, how does that happen? Does that happen because people just desperately want to have poison in their water?
I appreciate the admonition for more critical thinking. I think that's always healthy.
You're not doing enough on this subject. And there's a serious pattern here with what all the educated people are buying this stuff,
right?
Including lefties that don't buy this sort of stuff with other subjects.
Well, thanks for calling in, Greg. We're going to leave it there, and let's give someone else a chance. We got a couple people lined up. Thanks for calling in.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks.
What about you, listener? What do you think? Did you change your mind about it? What about some of the other races? Mike, what's on your mind?
Good morning, yeah. Thank you for KBOO. Thank you for KBOO. Thank you for KBOO.
Click on the tip jar. Click on the tip jar. Click on the tip jar.
Yeah. I've been a member owner many, many years, and thank goodness for it.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, I left for a few years, and boy, I missed it. It was a big part of leaving this area. That was I didn't think I'd miss it, and then I missed it, and now I'm back, and I'm thankful. So, all these other local papers as well. But let's talk about legitimacy and respected sources of advocacy and information. When some people think of the ADA, they think of doctors. I think some people think of the EPA, they think of, scientists. That is so false. The truth about the ADA and the EPA is you need to picture in your mind golf clothes, wheeling dealing, and Lear jets. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling in. What do you think about that, Dennis?
That's a good image. And probably to some degree at the upper echelons of these institutions, true.
Yeah. I think there's some truth in that. And people quote often the CDC claim that it's one of the 10 best health benefits of the 20th century. And there's some debate about that. Is that a scientific claim or is it more of an administrative statement? So
it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Yeah. Seven, what's on your mind? You're on the air. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call, guys. I wanted to just sound in. I was tuning in this morning. And I do appreciate KBOO. It's amazing to me the way these arguments get framed, and then it becomes a battle between what is scientific evidence and what is the tinfoil hat crowd. And to me, that's a dodge, because what we're talking about is the health of people's teeth. And so why do people continue to feed their children sugar? Why do people continue to feed their children all these artificial sweeteners? Why do we all have to have another mix in our toxic soup that our water is slowly becoming, to take account for people who won't take personal responsibility for their own actions? That's where my stand comes in on it. It's cost so much money. The fluoridation thing would cost so much money. Why not put that into figuring out how to have dental health care for everyone? Right. These are the parts of the argument that we're not really being covered.
Right.
Have a dental health encouragement program in the schools.
I think, look, with the fluoridation vote failing, I'm hoping that people who took up the mantle of dental health will push for these things. I mean, there are events, they're rare, they're far and few between, but they're, dental clinics for people on the street who need services, and you know people line up all day and they get treated in Memorial Coliseum or something, and I think that's a great idea, and I hope that doesn't get lost in this. And I think that's actually a test of intention for people who were pushing fluoridation, is if they're still committed to this and other issues that will have popular support. If fluoridation is not going to win a majority of Portlanders, in fact, a bare minority of Portlanders, it would be nice to see, if this is the goal, then let's find a way to come together and get something that does have majority support. It sounds like people mostly universally care about our children and low-income people and dental health and all the repercussions for physical health and education that has.
I definitely do. And the same city council or the same city that somehow, the school board, I know these are separate entities, but they have Coke machines and candy machines in all of our schools. Well, that is a conflict of interest to me. The fluoride's a silver bullet to cure the fact that we're shoving Coke down our children's throats? No. And I agree. I hope all these millions of dollars that were earmarked for fluoride could potentially be put forward to dental care. That would be what I'd like to see. We already have all, we supposedly had all the money. You know?
Well, Seven, where'd you get your information on fluoride? How are you so sure it's bad?
I'm not so sure that fluoride's bad. It's just another thing that I don't trust. I don't trust these quick fixes. There's dozens. My opinion is formed out of that there's dozens and dozens of things where humans have thought that they knew better than nature and have tried to administer things into the environment, and over and over and over again, it's been a disaster. Mm-hmm. There is no information. There's too much information out there for me to say, like, oh, I know for sure this, or I know for sure that. I do know that this has been a pattern of abuse and misuse by large governmental entities, and it's affected all of us globally. And so I don't want to see more of that. I don't want to see more of that pattern continue. I want to have more personal responsibility for the things that we do.
Right. So pulling out the old precautionary principle, that sounds really smart. Well, thanks for calling in, Seven.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me, you guys. Good morning.
Well, Portland, how do you explain it? City Council voted 5-0, and Portland rejected 60-40. What do you think, listener? Carlos, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd say two things that disappointed me during the campaign. One was the way that both the Mercury and Willamette Week ridiculed those who were opposed to fluoride. So I'd like to say that to Dennis, just that unhappiness with it.
Let's let him respond to that. What do you think? Was that a serious article you wrote, or was it poking fun?
I would say it was about 75% serious, but, you know, we're an entertaining newspaper, so we made it a little funny, and, you know, we press buttons, and that's what we do all the time to all kinds of people. We don't generally spare many people the occasional pointed barb, and, you know, in this case it happened to fall this way, but in plenty of other stories it falls another way, and I hear from a lot of people who wish we didn't do that, but you know everyone cheers when I do it to the Portland Business Alliance.
All right, so there's a couple of other things, too, I could mention. And that so many people voted for it knowing that there's a minority of people, probably small, that could be seriously harmed by it, such as Mike Lindbergh. And that, too, is disappointing since there are other ways of getting fluoride in teeth. But the main reason I wanted to call is for your listeners who are concerned about what goes into our bodies, the Department of Agriculture, the State Department recently approved the use of the growing of GMO crops in the Willamette Valley. And there's legislation in the state legislature that's meeting right now that would forbid it. And also in Jackson County, there's a ballot measure to prevent the growing of GMO crops down there. That's Ashland area. And at the same time, there's legislation that's made it to either the State House or Senate that would take away the rights of counties and people promoting ballot measures such as this one to prevent the growth of the growing of GMO crops. So
it's alarming.
The Center for Food Safety would be the place to contact for more information about that, or calling your state senator, state representative, and finding out who to write or call to try to influence these pieces of legislation, because Monsanto is getting a foothold in our state now, and if they have their way, within a couple of generations, our organic farming will be over with, and a lot of our family farms will be out of business.
Right. Well, is this referendum process a way forward in that regard as well?
Well, the referendum process is one piece of legislation is to outlaw, is to put all matters concerning GMOs under the influence of the state legislature. They basically... state referendum would probably still work, but what one bill is trying to do is to outlaw the ability of countywide ballot measures to outlaw GMOs.
Right. Well, thanks for calling in, Carlos.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Lisa Loving is off. I'm your host, Joe Meyer. My in-studio guest is Dennis Theralt. We're talking about election results and mostly fluoride. What do you think, listeners? Ross, you're on the air. Hey, Ross, what's happening? Good morning.
Well, full disclosure, I'm a KBOO volunteer, and I've worked with Joe before, and I've read the Mercury a lot, so I have a lot of things in common with you two there, just as far as reading and experience living in Portland.
Thank you.
But your last caller really kind of drives home the importance of looking, following the money, and looking at the ties between, say, the industrial agriculture industry and our politicians. And I encourage people to find out more about the Millions Against Monsanto campaign, because as it happens, that fluoride used in the municipal water fluoridation process is a co-product of industrial fertilizer production, and the links between these companies and our politicians are strong, and that's why we have, secret rider placed at the last minute. And you'll find out more if you go to the Organic Consumer Association's website and read up on Monsanto. That was a secret rider that was added on to an emergency funding bill that was called the Monsanto Protection Act, which would make it impossible to sue for damages from GMOs. But in the case of fluoride, our city council had a very interesting role to play, and it will be interesting to see who they go to work for after they leave our city government, and maybe look at who they worked for before they were on the city council, because that kind of hand-in-pocket relationship between politicians, the corporations that work for them as contractors, and how their campaigns are funded. So it's just, fluoride is not just a tiny little issue. It's connected to all these other issues. And in my case, I have a family member who becomes sick whenever she drinks municipally chlorinated, fluoridated water. She can drink bottled water that's been filtered, but when she drinks chlorinated, fluoridated water, she becomes violently ill within an hour. So
even the chlorine in the water is too much for her system.
Pardon me?
Even the chlorine is too much. I want to actually address something. You talked about what the city council members who have left the council have done before and after. And there are two of them.
The Water Bureau folks are the folks I'm talking about.
Well, Randy Leonard was in charge of the Water Bureau, and not the whole time he was on council. Dan Saltzman also was, but
right.
Randy Leonard was a former fire union president, and now he's apparently retired in West Lynn, based on the Willamette Week's Lou story. But Sam Adams, of course, was mayor. He has been in politics for most of his life. He
right.
was chief of staff for 12 years before running on the council. Now he's running City Club. So I don't want people to think that we have city commissioners who were corporate stooges and then went back to being corporate stooges. I mean,
I'm not suggesting they're stooges. I think that they're very adept at doing their jobs. And, if you look at the contractors who are awarded the reservoir projects and who they're related to, I think you'll find that there's a whole lot of friendly dealing going on between the contractors and the people in city government. It's right there, Dennis. You can see it.
Okay.
Just talk to Joe about it. I think you'll find out a lot.
Yeah.
And thanks for doing all the reporting you do.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling me, Ross. That was awesome. The studio lines are open, 503-231-8187. We're talking about the election. Marie, you're on the air. What's on
your
mind?
Good morning. Is this Joe?
This is Joe, Marie.
Good morning, Joe and Dennis.
Hi.
Thank
morning.
You for covering this wonderful subject. I wanted to add a contribution of what really can prevent dental caries that most people in many KBOO programs haven't talked about. And it's not just the sugar issue, which also would include corn syrup. Ironically, we really are experiencing terrible deficiency in our diet, which absolutely contributes to the dental cavities. And many people don't understand that deficiencies in the bloodstream go right up into the root of the tooth and go into the enamel. And so they don't understand by us not having a sufficiently good diet, it does absolutely cause caries or cavities. And quickly, there's a wonderful dentist who's now deceased, and it's a wonder, he has many books, named Weston A. Price, P-R-I-C-E. And what he and his wife did, they traveled around the world photographing different peoples, like Malaysia, Africa, and their teeth. And the wonderful and stunning information he found out is that these tribal people, when they moved to the city, within years, like within 2 years, their whole chemistry of their body changed. And I'll give you a quick example. He studied families that lived, like, say, in Africa in a outlying area, then moved into a bigger city. And the first children born had these nice white and straight teeth. But when they moved into the city, the next babies, just 1 or 2 years later, would have babies with crooked teeth, more cavities. It was all about diet. It's not just the sugar. They need fresh vegetables. They need the enzymes. And then there's a little bit more. This is a thing for men that men would love to hear. In his study, he found out that if people can have access to organic meat with the fat, that's why men crave fat on steak. If it is organic, the fat actually helps the body absorb calcium and absorb minerals. And there's a lot of research on this, but it's Weston A. Price. There's cookbooks associated with it. And this is good news in the middle of all this confusion about chemicals, is we need good nutrition, and we won't have the cavities.
I like that message.
Well, Marie, how can we get there, though? I think one of the messages from the pro side was this is a quick and easy method, quick and cheap method, and something like nutrition is a difficult and expensive method.
Yes, and the thing is that Americans are kind of brainwashed into, oh, we don't deserve good nutrition. But our forefathers, they were eating out of gardens, and we deserve the same rights to eat real food. That's our right.
That's our right, but we have to make it a reality somehow, and there's seemingly a financial barrier to get there, whereas adding fluoridating chemicals to our water is cheap.
Right, and quick fixes, as we often know, might have a side impact. And then one more thing that I commented, I called it a lot on the anti-fluoride. It is a reality that Fukushima radiation is blowing over. That is reality, and it is a reality. It is entering our bodies, and it is hurting our thyroid. And fluoride and other chemicals really are hard on the thyroid. So there's a whole lot to that, but that's just my quick summary. There's books and information on thyroid. And so honestly, the Fukushima issue makes chemicals even more serious, especially for us in the Northwest.
Right. Well, any clues on how to move forward with better nutrition?
Absolutely. Real nutrition, fresh. The fresher, the better. And some meat, but organic. Some meat is all right, too.
Well, any clues on as how to get there?
Well, I love, like, for example, all the work that Portland's doing with the urban gardening. I mean, when I said Portland, I meant to be saying Cable. Cable was doing so much promoting excellent nutrition. And then one last thing, they had a scary program on GMOs yesterday. I myself already knew GMOs were bad, and I've eaten almost maybe 95% organic for many years, but after hearing that GMO program, I didn't realize GMOs aren't just bad. They are very dangerous. They cause genetic damage. So I know we need to get the word out to people more. We need to be eating organic.
That's a good message. Thanks so much for calling in. You're listening to Wednesday.
Thank you for being host.
Oh, you're welcome. It's fun. You're listening to Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your guest host, Joe Meyer. Dennis Thorold's joining me in the studio. Coming up this morning on The Boo at 9 on Political Perspectives, Paul Rowland interviews Normal Stockwell of Wart Radio in Madison, Wisconsin on the state of community radio in the United States. At 10 here, Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Guatemala's top court tosses out the historic conviction for genocide and crimes against humanity of General Riomont. Also, a compelling new documentary on the intimidation and censorship faced by some of the most important journalists of our time. At 11 on The Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter interviews Holly Pruitt, who just started Portland's first ever Death Cafe, where participants are encouraged to talk freely about life, death, and dying while having tea and other treats. Other guests are Kate Brasington, who co-hosted the PDX Death Cafe, and Karen Pauly, a participant. And at 11:30, host Kathleen Stevenson speaks with local mural artists and creative space advocates N.O. Bonzo and Thomas at the Portland Street Art Alliance about promoting creative interventions in public spaces. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Phone lines are open, 503-231-8187. Esteban, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, good morning, Joe. Thanks for being there, both of you. This was illustrated the other night on another TV or a radio talk show where the host asked people across the United States and around the world to call in and tell the listeners what is printed on the back of their fluoridated tube of toothpaste. And I turned in halfway through your show, so I don't know if anybody else has brought this up, but on all the fluoride toothpaste that's already out there, it says on the back, keep out of the reach of children under six, and if you ingest any more, any larger amount than it takes to brush your teeth, if you ingest that, immediately call poison control and seek medical attention immediately. That warning is already on what is going out to the public as far as topically administered, and it has a warning, do not ingest because it is poison. That's already there. So that it should be pretty obvious,
well,
you know, to start with, what's going out there is poison.
Well, let me tell you, though, it's
not meant to ingest internally.
I have at times in my life as a kid, I have eaten more than a pea-sized amount of toothpaste, and I did not call the poison control.
You said as a kid, did it have fluoride in it?
Yes.
Did it have?
We didn't have we had Aquafresh toothpaste when I was a kid. We didn't get special toothpaste. My kids now have special toothpaste, but they like to get at the minty kind. But we don't let them. But it's a little too spicy for their tongues. But I've eaten it before, and the problem is you don't want them to eat the whole tube. That would be bad. I mean, there's other stuff in toothpaste besides the fluoride that I don't think they should eat.
A little bit over a long period of time, is accumulative.
Yeah. So I think though, but that pea size amount, it's also because the concentration of the fluoride in toothpaste, because it's topical, is dramatically higher than the 0.7 parts per million that would be in water.
Would you give your children a little bit of rat poisoning?
No, but we do give them fluoride tablets. So I guess
That's your choice. That's your choice as a parent, the same as the food that you feed your children, the same as the environment you raise them in. That's your choice. But would you go next door to your neighbor's house and say, okay, I'm giving it to mine. Now, I'm telling you, it's good for yours, too, so you should do the same. Would you do that?
Well, if here's the thing.
Would you do that to your neighbor, Joe? Would you?
Joe would not do that to his neighbor. I don't think anyone would do that to their neighbor.
Well, okay then. That's just what this initiative just did, is it said, some of us think it's good for our children, and it's good for poor children who can't afford fluoride, so we should give it to everyone. You know about nepotism, the word nepotism, Joe?
Yeah, I've heard of that word.
Okay, yeah, well, it's called favoritism.
Right.
And it's been going on at KBOO, and that's why there's a big stir going on with our new manager right now, because she's getting rid of it.
No doubt. Well, was the tube of toothpaste all you need to know to make a decision on this, Esteban, or do you have more information?
Oh, no, there's too much information out there, and the problem is... we have too many adults these days masquerading as mature adults, and they're afflicted with autism. And part of autism is you don't recognize human signals when they're right in front of you. You don't pick up on humanness.
Right. What's the way forward, then? What's the good news, Esteban?
The good news is the awareness is out there. The truth always reveals itself, even though it's covered up with lies for a long time. But it does reveal itself eventually. And we're just in the stages of corporate money wanting to sell a product to somebody. It's just like the lady was just talking, Marie was just talking about what she heard on Dennis Bernstein's show yesterday about the GMO products that Monsanto is putting out there.
Right.
It has to do with the fact that the head of one of our largest regulatory industries or agencies in the government, federal government, is headed by a former CEO of Monsanto. That's who Obama put in there. Now, that is nepotism, because that man has a conflict of interest, but he's been placed in a high position for decision-making that affects everybody, but he has an interest. That's called favoritism or nepotism.
Right. So how do we work? How do we work against that, then? What's the way forward?
Information and knowledge.
Right.
And you have to be informed. It starts way back to the founding of our country. The only way for a democracy to thrive is to have an informed public. Right. And right now, with only 25% of our populace voting on the initiative yesterday, that does not represent 100%. That it represents only one quarter, and half of that one quarter was obviously very swayed by propaganda.
It's hard to know what propaganda is in this case. I think there are good people on both sides.
It's not the whole truth.
Yeah.
You can be assured of that.
Yeah.
You can be assured of that, because the information that does come from propaganda only represents one way of thinking, and it doesn't contain all of the information concerning what decision is being made.
Yeah, it seems like a
that happens all the time.
It seemed like a strange way to make a public health decision. Thanks for calling in just a moment.
Well, strange. We live in a strange society, and the people who are in positions of power and running it are extremely strange. That comes out every time one of their personal lives gets exposed. They're weird, and they're not human.
No doubt. Thanks for calling in just a moment. Let's give somebody else a chance. Jack, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I called before he got on, before Esteban was on the line, but we were talking about the same thing. And I brought this up last week on a show there, and it kind of got blown off. But it is right there on the toothpaste. Every commercial brand of toothpaste out there has got sodium monofluorophosphate. Okay, and that's the active ingredient. It's not the same fluoride that they were going to put in the water. And it's put in the water in many places. It's a different compound, and yes, there is the warning if you if a child ingests more than would normally be used in brushing, do something about it. Okay, so anyway, there it is. If you want fluoride on your teeth, just brush your teeth with a commercial toothpaste, and you're going to get it. It's that simple. And I'm just confounded about why they, who on earth thought that this is something that needs to be pushed on everybody in a global sense beyond what's easily available through if you want to get a toothpaste that doesn't have fluoride in it, it's actually hard to find. You know, it's not common. So, you know, that's a point that I'd never heard the point made very clearly and very strongly during the debate about this whole thing. And I'm just wanted to share it.
I would say, so the choice issue is important, and it actually reaches far beyond fluoride. I mean, if we think about what government gets to do and what we don't like it doing in our names, I mean, you know, why do we allow, we allow a lot of things. We allow, you know, defense spending that a lot of people wouldn't like. Other people wouldn't like social services programs in our name. I think this is obviously a giant source of contention is whether fluoride, if we don't think fluoride is safe, that's one thing. If we think fluoride is safe and effective and harmless, then it doesn't, it's not much of a stretch to put it in the water and say, people.
No,
I think that's the issue.
Wait a minute. Excuse me. I'm sorry. The real distinction here is that the sodium monofluorophosphate that is in toothpaste, it's a pharmaceutical compound designed specifically to be applied topically to the teeth for protection. The other, I can't remember the name of the compound, fluorosilicin acidic, some kind of acidic compound. I can't remember it. And it's a different compound. And to put it in all the water that is going to be used for all purposes is a huge Big Brother operation. And you agreed exactly with what you said, that government spending without sanction by the people on various things, the wars are the worst of all, of course, This is a typical 1984 style Big Brother government that I'm certain that 99% of Americans don't want.
Well, let's I think Big Brother is a stretch, because let's look at what happened. Yes, lobbyists got to an elected city council that voted for it, but we had the power to take that vote and 30 to 40,000 people signed signatures that got a referendum on the ballot. And what happened yesterday, 60% of the people who voted in an election said, no, we don't want that. And if this were a Big Brother system, that option does not exist, and that vote doesn't happen.
Agreed. If we stand up to it, yeah, we can be successful. It to me is a huge nuisance to have to fight those guys in this way. I mean, what a bother.
Well, that's fair, but that's our right. And in a Big Brother system, we don't get to have that nuisance. So that's the thing. I don't like those Big Brother comparisons, because we have a lot of options, and there's a charter amendment that. You know, people, if they really don't want fluoride in Portland's water, they can then say, we never want the council to have that ability again. We're allowed to restrict what our city council can do moving forward.
Okay, well, I'm glad that we were able to assert our voice in this way. I wish we could do the same thing with the wars.
I think democracy is not really meant to be easy. I think Ben Franklin is quoted as saying, a democracy, madame, if you can hold it. So I wonder...
A republic. You have a republic, madame, if you can keep it.
Thank you.
And a democratic republic is what we do have, and we do have to fight like crazy to keep it something, at least some kind of level playing field, marginally at least.
So we want to celebrate what we did here in Portland.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling in, Jack. I think we've got time for one or two more callers. Harry, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes. I just want to I think that in about 20 or 30 years, America is going to have an epidemic. The epidemic will be fluorosis. Right now, 40% of all children in America have mild cases of fluorosis. Fluorosis only comes from one source only. When fluoridated water by municipalities.
Right. I think when fluoride was first discovered, people had brown, healthy teeth back in 1902 or something, in Colorado or something. Yeah. So, yeah.
But we have, okay, fluorosis is a disease that people are going to start having. And that's when the fluoride, the body can't reject the fluoride, so it puts it in the teeth and in the bones.
Right. Well, what's the way forward then?
I don't know how dentists are going to start cleaning it, but if 40% of our children in the United States have it, when they're adults, they're going to have really messed up teeth.
What's the way forward then? How can we stop that?
Remove fluoridation from all the waters, and hopefully our grandchildren won't have it.
All right. Maybe the rest of the country will follow Portland's lead. Thanks for calling in. I think we have time for one more call.
Hey, goodbye.
Lynn, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
All right. Well, just two little things. I know it's 8:55. I have a friend who's a water scientist, and one of the things she said was that just stunned her was that why would we want to mess up? She said, like fluoride, don't like fluoride. Why would you want to tamper with one of the few pristine water sources left in the country? A. B, I don't want to quarrel with Esteban, but I believe nepotism is hiring family members. And, not just people that maybe
you're right about that, Lynn.
Whatever, I believe so. Anyway, I just like to clarify those things, because on TV we like to get things right, don't we?
Oh, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Thanks for
that. I think they were short enough to give us one more. Jim, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, I wanted to talk about the salmon and any research you've done on the salmon and ecosystem.
Thanks. What do you got? The effect of fluoride on salmon? Jim? I think Jim's phone is not any good. Well, that was basically a prompt. Well, Dennis, thanks so much for calling in. We didn't get any pro fluoride. voices.
I didn't necessarily anticipate.
And I think a lot of people were taking pot shots at you, so thanks for being a good sport.
That's part of what I do.
Thanks for listening to Wednesday Talk Radio. This is Joe Meyer.
Thanks, Joe.
No, that's what KBOO's for. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 9 o'clock straight up. Coming up next on Political Perspectives, Paul Rowland interviews Norman Stockwell of WORT Radio in Madison, Wisconsin, on the state of community radio in the United States. At 10 o'clock here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Guatemala's top court tosses out historic conviction for genocide and crimes against humanity of General Rios Montt. Also a compelling new documentary on the intimidation and censorship faced by some of the most important journalists of our time. At 11 on The Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter interviews Holly Pruitt, who just started Portland's first ever Death Cafe. And at 11:30, host Kathleen Stevenson speaks with local mural artists and creative space advocates in Obonzo and Tomas Valdez on the Portland Street Art Alliance about promoting creative interventions in public spaces.
"65 years ago this week, the Columbia River flooded into the largest public housing project in the U.S. at the time, leaving 18,000 black people homeless and changing race relations in Portland forever. On Friday, May 24th, from 8 a.m. to noon, KBOO presents a special program on the Vanport flood and racism in Portland, 65 years later. We'll feature historians and archived audio, as well as a discussion led by PSU professor and activist Walida Imarisha, asking why there's so few black people in Oregon. That's Friday, May 24th, from 8 a.m. to noon on KBOO.
Tune in on Wednesday, May 22nd, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. for a live broadcast from Portland State University of a panel discussion on the Portland Women's Movement. We'll hear from women involved in a 1980 lawsuit charging Oregon's university system with discriminating against women. That's May 22nd, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on KBOO.
And good morning. Thank you, Elvis Costello. Oldie but goodie. Boy, I remember that. That was a song of my youth. My name is Paul Rowland. This is Political Perspectives here on your community radio station, 90.7 FM in Portland. And we're going to be talking about community radio. This is radio reflecting on radio. And I've got on the line from Madison, Wisconsin, Norm Stockwell. Long time. It's been 30 years in the business, as they say, with WRT that whole time. And we're going to hear all about his experience and what his experience has, he has to say based on his experience about what's going on in community radio with all the various challenges, some threats, obstacles, opportunities. What's going on in community radio in competition with the internet? That's what they say. Some people say radio is dying out. Some people say it's as vibrant as ever. People are clamoring to buy the frequencies that are opening up. There's low-power FM stations opening up all over the country. It's a kind of a wide-open field. Hello, Norm. Are you there?
I am indeed. Thank you very much for having me on.
Right on. And I didn't really give you much of an introduction, but maybe you could say that yourself. You've been, as I said, involved with WRT for about 30 years, right, this year?
Yeah, it'll be 30 years in a month or so, I think, that I've been here. I was a volunteer at the station for many, many years, and then got hired on to the paid staff about 17, almost 18 years ago, and been doing that ever since. My job title here at WRT is Operations Coordinator, which is the way we structure it. We have a staff collective here at WORT, and so everyone has their areas of responsibility, but then the staff together handles the day-to-day operations of the station. So my job is a lot of the administrative stuff, financial management, legal compliance, engineering, building maintenance, things like that. We have other people that do the news programming, the music programming, the fundraising, and so on.
Sounds like it includes a lot of different components, your job.
Yeah, it's sort of a big wide area of operations, but everything kind of works well together. When you have a good functioning staff collective, everybody picks up the pieces where they need to be picked up and works to support each other in getting the job done.
And you have not only been involved in WRT, which maybe you can talk about a little greater detail, how you got involved, kind of like how it's changed over the years, just like sort of the feeling of being involved in community radio, but you've also been involved at wider levels. You've been involved with the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. You've been involved with I'm reading from a biography from an award that you won.
Radio Coalition and AMARC, the World Association of Community Broadcasters.
Well, I was going to say that in 2002, when Pacifica's current affiliates program, that is, there's stations, in fact, cable used to be an affiliate, I believe, is my understanding.